Hi, I'm Rajul Kadakia. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Tech Girl. I'm an early stage investor and philanthropist, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Yeah. My name is Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with talented and interesting individuals linked to the global Indian and South Asian community. It's informal and informative, adding insights to our evolving cultural expressions, where each person can proudly say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. Hi, everyone. And on this episode of Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, as part of our ongoing In Diaspora series, a conversation with entrepreneur, investor, and philanthropist Rajul Kadakia. Stay tuned. Once again, thank you so much for listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, and sharing it with your friends and family, and for following along on social media. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes, please take a moment to submit a kind rating and review, as it's very much appreciated. Now, as wonderful as professional success is, it almost always is the result of dedication, and particularly processing many, many lessons learned. Along the way, the journey to attaining that success, though, can also feel uncharted, uncertain, and especially hard to integrate with, well, life. And for women, especially those who are entrepreneurs or founders in the tech and business world, managing and overcoming the many systemic barriers can make this feel like expending an immense amount of energy on a very, very lonely path. Rajul Kadakia is the CEO and co-founder of Tech Girl, and thankfully is creating a more equitable landscape for women in the tech industry, and especially supporting vehicles for funding, development, and empowerment. She's a serial entrepreneur, investor, and philanthropist who started in investment banking and through her experience has built an expertise as an angel investor to identify and nurture promising startups, with a particular lens on women-led ventures. She's been a champion in promoting gender equity and empowering diverse founders, and through mentorship and collaboration, is building a welcoming ecosystem that fosters inclusion and community building. Moreover, Rajul's commitment to giving and philanthropy is part of her core values, serving on many nonprofit boards and one of the Founders Circle members at In Diaspora, the nonprofit group that's inspiring and positioning global Indians to be a force for good. We caught up for a conversation about her ongoing work and the lessons learned from her many experiences, but I started by asking a bit more about Tech Girl, especially what it's meant for her personally and why.
Tech Girl is a hyper-focused LinkedIn for first-time female founders. And so I always say this, Tech Girl is something that I wish I had when I was a female VC-funded founder back in Silicon Valley. So that's how I got my start. But I was super lonely, didn't know how to open doors, didn't have another woman like me to actually talk to about what to do next, what's going on, kind of navigate the space. And all too often, founders actually just fall off, or female founders fall off because they network differently, or they don't know the next step to take, or you know, who can they talk to about XYZ, and so they just kind of fall out of the race. So one of the things I say, it's unfortunate that we still have to have a platform like Tech Girl, but what's fortunate is that a lot of us are having these conversations now, which wasn't the case in my time. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of men. I have four other co-founders, and two of them are men. So men are our allies. This is actually changing. My husband, he has a daughter. We have a daughter. Conversations are changing, which wasn't the case when I was an entrepreneur.
Well, and you mentioned the word lonely. Right. I mean, like that feeling of being alone and not having community or mentorship or even people to pave paths in front of you. When did you yourself, given that experience you just shared, when did you yourself kind of first realize that there was this major gap, whether it's in kind of camaraderie or solidarity or even community or even just the general equity gap for women in the tech industry? I mean, was there a series of aha moments? Was it something that just sort of was more reflective that you look back on? When did it become obvious to you that this was such an important gap that is there for women in this space?
So I think it happened when I started mentoring founders, other founders, and I noticed that the gap actually exists with all founders, but men have more resources. So I started mentoring founders, and that's when I'm like, okay, this is very interesting. They all have the same questions like, you know, how do I find a tech co-founder? What is vesting? What is a slide deck? You know, how do I pitch? All of those questions are the same, but everything that's out there, well, not now, things are starting to get better. But when I started this, you know, what was out there was still a gap for how women network, and everything is about networking. How do you open that first door? So women have children, yet there's all these happy hours. Women need to have babysitting, and they're just going here to all these events, and they're like, oh, okay. And you listen to this amazing, you know, you listen to these amazing speeches. They're all successful people. But you come back and you go, great, how does this apply to me? And they still don't understand how it applies. So it's been, I guess I would say it's been a series of, you know, things that have happened. But it started when I started mentoring founders, and then I started investing in female founders. So one of the biggest things that I noticed about female founders when I was mentoring them is that they're very isolated and lonely. So they think that there's not other female founders out there. They're always asking me, where can I find another female founder? And what is also really interesting is that they think it's just happening to them, which is crazy. Right. So something happens from a funding perspective, something happens from a setback, and they feel, they take it personally, like it's only happening to them. Yeah. And so then what I do is I connect them with other female founders. I'm like, oh my gosh, you have to talk to XYZ because this just happened to them. And all of a sudden now it's normalized. It's not like they're taking it personally.
Right, right. And it almost feels like, you know, for anyone not to feel alone. Is there, have you found that there's a little bit of almost like a dual pronged approach to this, where you're serving to provide the community as a mentor, but then you're also linking up with peers so that, you know, they can actually have that shared experience as well?
Exactly. So our first goal, what we just launched with at TechGirl, is where a founder can connect with a founder, and they can connect based on their technology or based on their city. It's just literally having this database of founders, because when we're on LinkedIn or Lunch Club or anything like that, or a networking event, you don't really know what happened to that founder. And the other thing is exactly what you asked. It's like, can we teach them to fish themselves? Can we actually, instead of just kind of being like, it's not a charity case, female founders are not a charity case. That's really important that we all understand. When I'm investing in a founder, it's not a charity. It's literally, it's a missed opportunity for others. And I feel like, oh my gosh, I found this opportunity. This is so amazing. So one of the things is actually to connect them with other founders so they can support each other. They can go to networking events together. They can share resources. They can share tools. They can soundboard their stories. Then once you have this, we're actually introducing programming and mentorship and, you know, introducing angels. And because we have an understanding of what space they're in, what stage they're at, and what they're seeking, what their startup needs are. So we can actually strike strategically, hopefully, to keep more founders in the pool.
It's almost like having a concierge agent, you know, there for you. But especially, you know, when you have that trust and that belief in someone, that makes a big difference. I imagine that for you, when you started in investment banking and you've been a serial entrepreneur and an investor, as you've kind of now connected the dots along the way, and in some ways reflecting on what you just said, what have you perhaps had to unlearn to particularly make an impact as someone dedicated to advancing equity, especially for women just like you?
That's a really good question. I think one of the things that I had to unlearn is being a perfectionist. So this was something that I'm still unlearning. And I think
It's a continuous process, right?
Yes. So many founders make this mistake because, and especially female founders, and I actually have a theory behind this. So they're so hesitant to put themselves out there. And we keep hearing the same thing like, oh, we need more female founders in a pitch competition. We need more female founders to pitch. We need just, you know, they're not putting themselves out there. The theory I have, the reason they're not putting themselves out there is because it's not being a perfectionist necessarily, but it's along those lines, is that they feel they have to get it right because they only have that one chance at bat. Yeah. Whereas if you think about a job, like a job opportunity or whenever we, you know, try to get jobs, I would have like, it was a numbers game. I was always told that. So my first job was maybe like, you know, 30 interviews. And then on the first interview, they asked me a question and I'm like, oh, you know, I didn't know the answer to this, but now I know it for the second one. And then I know it better for the third one. And eventually in my 10th interview, 15th interview, I have all of those devil's advocate questions that they're going to ask me. Yeah. Whereas female founders, if they're pitching, they better get it right, because the number of times at bat, unfortunately, isn't there. And so it's a do or die situation. And so I think they're trying to just get it all perfect, before they come out there. And I think that was the case with me as well, yeah. Subtly. Besides me just being a perfectionist, I had to unlearn that.
Well, is it, did you have to, in many ways, in thinking about what you had to unlearn and then, you know, thinking about how you mentor and how you build community, is it important for there to be very obvious reminders that it's an iterative process, that not letting perfection, of course, be the enemy of your progress, and that while those opportunities are hopefully expanding, that to put yourself in a position that it's part of an iterative practice, it's part of ongoing learning, it's part of ongoing growth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's all about learning from your mistakes, yeah. And you know, having setbacks and how you bounce back from them. And this is something that I keep reminding my founders, is that mistakes are actually good. Failures are actually good. It's just how you react to them. And I'm not a saint, meaning I never did that. I'm not doing it now. It's right. An iterative right. process, right? It's yeah. Like, oh yeah, it's easy to preach. It's easy to tell other people that. But, you know, you take mistakes very personally. You take failures really personally. And then how do you get back on the horse, and how you react to it, and how you learn from it, and how you grow from it is what's important. And it's still an iterative process, even for me.
Do you think that, you know, as you become more experienced and now you have a little bit different lens on this landscape, especially with success, does that find you taking more risk and being a little more confident to make those mistakes, as opposed to someone who's first starting out where they don't necessarily have that kind of sense of risk taking or the ability to have that trust in themselves or that confidence in themselves, especially if there isn't kind of a fallback network or a fallback mesh to have that security?
Yeah, no, definitely. I have a lot more confidence today than I ever did before. But again, this came because I have the resources now. It's based on age, it's based on experience, it's sure. based on all those mistakes over the years and learning from them and just getting back out there. But this is something that I'm actually working on to teach my founders, is confidence. I feel many, many people think that, oh, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not rich enough. I mean, everyone, men, women, everyone, sure. Everyone has insecurities. And so one of the things that I'm actually working on is, how do you instill confidence in someone, especially it's my line of work with female founders and the companies I've invested in, is how do you instill that confidence when they don't have that confidence, right, in one area of their life? And so one of the things I'm actually talking about is focus on your strength. Okay, maybe you're not rich enough, maybe you're not XYZ enough, but then what is your strength? And lead with that. So that we actually have confidence early on, versus having to get to my age, getting to my level of experience, you know, where it's much easier for me, but again, it's still not easy for me. Right. Well, that's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And does that lend the back to the question or lead back to the question in some ways of saying, how can you be content with what you have and build upon that, as opposed to constant dissatisfaction and therefore leading to, you know, a lack of confidence?
No, I actually wish you could tell me that answer, because me, I mean, I would love to flip this on you, because that is one of the biggest things I'm struggling with. And is it good or is it bad? Because if I right. get X, I want Y. If I get Y, I want Z, right? And so where is it that you're creating your better version of yourself, and when should it be enough? And I'm actually yeah. struggling with that myself. It's like, I feel like there's a responsibility from me Yeah. to my tech girls, to my female founders, because I have this network, I have this know-how, I have everything. And so I want to keep giving. At the same time, you know, people go, why are you doing this? Why are you working so hard? Why does it matter now? And I'm like, because I don't feel like I've reached my full potential. And so yeah. everyone, this is my own perspective, yeah. everyone should live to their fullest potential as they see what they're capable of. Not obviously not to anyone else's potential, and everyone has different limits of that. And I feel that's where you get satisfaction, is when yeah. you're living to your potential, not necessarily like if I make X amount of money, if I travel 5 countries, it's right. what are you capable of, and have you hit that limit, or do you have more to offer?
Yeah, you know, it's a rough dance, right, all around, that like how do you naturally find peace with what you're doing, yet continually have a sense of drive and achievement and strive for to maximizing your potential without it feeling like it's, you know, burning you out, without it feeling like it's just a constant rat race or a treadmill. And particularly for women in the workforce, particularly for women of color, particularly for anyone who that, for that matter, is marginalized or vulnerable, that can be a real struggle.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with Rajul Kadakia. And I want now to share a bit more with you about Indiaspora, a nonprofit whose mission is to inspire and position the global Indian diaspora to be a force for good. The organization is engaged in the areas of philanthropy, social impact, entrepreneurship, innovation, as well as civic and nonpartisan political engagement. Indiaspora is active in an ever-expanding list of countries, including the US, UK, Canada, the UAE, Singapore, and Australia. Of course, this year, with the backdrop of India holding the G20 presidency, Indiaspora is organizing a three-day forum in New Delhi in late August to review and discuss some of the most pressing issues of our times, from climate change to foreign policy to economic equity and inclusion in healthcare. You can find out more at www.indiaspora.org and follow Indiaspora on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Conversation. It's the antidote to apathy and the catalyst for relationships. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Congressman Ro Khanna, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Welcome back to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin now our conversation with Rajul Kadakia.
I wanted to lead into something that touches on, which is, does it mean something different in this space to be an Indian American entrepreneur and an investor with a lens on women in tech? Does that descriptor or label in any way change the narrative? I mean, it's a personal identity, of course, but how has that maybe changed your thinking in leading this, or even in the outcomes for that matter, particularly for women?
So me as an Indian American, I've been really torn because my parents came here, but I was born here. Yeah. And so when I was younger, I was actually bullied being Indian, which, you know, it's kind of like, I can't believe I'm actually talking about it because it's one of those things that I was always ashamed of. You know, I was like, my grandmother would wear a sari and we were in Chicago and her and my grandfather would be walking and I'd be so embarrassed by this. So I think as I analyze myself, I'm like, I guess I started, you know, building this shield around me. But at the same time, I grew up in a very Indian family, which means, you know, I embraced my culture, and it's almost like I was living two lives. And literally, I'm like, you know, I would be split down the middle. It's like all of a sudden I put on this American white type of persona when I'm in the business world. And then I have this whole other side of me, which I go to the temple and, you know, I go and do Garba, I'm Gujarati. And I, you know, so all of this kind of stuff, and I'm very, very religious. So which comes from my culture. I love our culture. I love Bollywood movies. I love, you know, learning Hindi or speaking Hindi.
Yeah.
So I feel like I don't bring that into my workspace and vice versa. I don't bring that into the other side. And now at this age is where I'm starting to bring the two together. And I'm so proud of our culture and I'm so proud and I own it. And I'm just like, yes, I'm Indian American and this is who I am. And I love it.
You know, definitely thinking about how those lanes stay separate. Does the embrace, especially at this stage in your life and in your career, does the embrace of that and sort of integrating the two lanes together, does that lead to better outcomes? Does that lead to better business?
I don't know if it necessarily leads to better it could lead to better business, but I'm just not aware of it. In my case, I don't know if it necessarily leads to better business. Yeah. I do find myself, for example, if you could see it, you could be it type of thing. So I do serve as a good role model to South Asian women. I started, you know, investing in South Asian women. I'm starting to promote South Asian women. So I am giving back to South Asian women because I identify with them. I don't know if being Indian necessarily makes them a better business person.
I guess it's more of the idea that, you know, being your authentic self and being your whole self rather than parking part of yourself at the door as you enter a room is, you know, certainly going to allow you to sort of just feel more comfortable with who yes. you are and therefore, you know, kind of be 100% all the time.
No, I love that you're saying this because this is one of my values is authenticity, right? And I think that value wasn't necessarily there in the beginning of my career. And I'm so glad you're mentioning it because now I'm just like, own who you are. Again, back to the confidence thing, right?
Right.
It's like, figure out your strengths, own who you are, be true to yourself so that you're just showing up. I have, you know, I have a son and a daughter. I want to be there in my true form as my true self versus being a hypocrite to myself.
Right.
So totally agreed.
Let me ask you this. I mean, how is your own experience perhaps, I mean, both for that matter in parenting and leadership, made you particularly more empathic, especially with women who are, again, just first starting out and, you know, in that space that can feel so lonely?
Right. I think it was just experience. I got funded by, I was a venture funded founder a long time ago. I was one of the OGs. We're not going to say my age. We're not going to say my age on this podcast.
Won't. Don't worry.
But I was one of the original OGs. But I actually got funded after kids, which means that I had small kids. You know, I've been married for 26 years, but we were like, what are gender roles? You know, who needs to be doing the homework? Who needs to be picking up? But I was VC funded. I had this huge pressure and I was sitting there. I was a leader. I was a CEO and I was a first time CEO. So I didn't know what the heck I was doing. So even though it looks glamorous, like, oh my gosh, she's venture funded. I was in over my head and I had no one to turn to. And I couldn't really talk about it at home because we were already, and to be full disclosure, we were already having issues about parenting and about finances, about just normal life as we're growing, you know, as we're building our family and stuff like that. So it's not like I could go home and complain. At the same time, I couldn't complain to my investors and I couldn't complain. I was a CEO, so I couldn't tell any of my people that, you know, were looking up to me. So it was a very, very lonely journey. And literally I would sit in the car, and I wish people would share more of this, is what I'm about to say, is that I would sit in the car and I would cry and I would just be by myself, you know, whatever my setbacks were, whatever was going on, I had to keep this strong facade out there. And then I would just, you know, quietly cry, literally park my car on the side of the road, be super frustrated, not have anyone to turn to. And this is why I'm super empathetic to other female founders. I'm like, I can only imagine what your journey looks like even today. It could be a cultural issue. It could be a lack of support issue. It could be having a kids issue. It could be not having a kids issue.
Right.
It could be anything that you're going through. And we have multiple facets to our life. And it's like one of those things could be out of balance. And I've always had one of those things out of balance at any given point. Even now, I have things out of balance.
Sure.
And so how do you get back to it? And so I'm super empathetic because I feel like I've lived so many lives in my journey.
When you think about that, just sort of like the idea of having that shared experience and being empathetic to that particular, the plight of someone who's trying to integrate and balance and juggle so many different things, when did you first start to trust yourself as a leader and then understand that this is a part of life as a leader, as a woman in the entrepreneurial and in the startup space or in the tech space or in the investment space?
You know, it's really interesting because it's like the imposter syndrome. We're actually talking about me as a leader. Other people talk to me as if I'm a leader, but me internally, I don't feel like that. Which is really interesting, right? It's like so many people think I am a leader. I create change. I make change. I'm doing all of this. I feel like I'm a pioneer. I feel like I keep, you know, trying to like whatever I was doing with venture funding, I mean, we moved to Palo Alto and I'm like, I have to do this. And yeah. Leadership kind of came second almost.
Sure.
It's one of these things that I'm still, it's still evolving. It's still a work in progress. And so I don't know, meaning I am a leader. I don't know if I'm answering your question. I know I'm a leader. I love, you know, creating change and being a good example to my kids, being a good example for society. But I don't view myself as a leader like I would lead, view someone else, which is crazy.
Do you find that there were switches? I mean, obviously the outcomes speak to your leadership, right? I mean, you've done great work and certainly there's a lot of success. Do you still have trouble trusting yourself?
I do. That is a very interesting question. I'm so confident in myself, which is why I keep trying new things. And I'm so confident that I can connect with people. But everyone has insecurities, right? Yeah. And so I keep coming back to this. It's like, yes, I trust myself that I can do anything I put my mind to. But do I have insecurities? Do I get nervous about things? Do I falter? Do I have doubts? Yes. Continuously. And this is something that I keep sharing with my founders, is that even at my level, even with my network, even with my resources, even with my experience, there's so many things I don't know. So for example, I'll give you an example. And this is like me putting myself completely out there.
Yeah.
I'm older. And so what ends up happening is apparently I want to create impact. I want to create impact with my, you know, philanthropic, like we just created Tech Girl nonprofit. I want to do IANA, which is to help female founders in emerging countries.
Yeah.
But in order to do that, apparently I have to be on social media. What the heck? What the heck?
Oh no, not that.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And so it's like, oh, you have to, you know, this whole equipment set up. You have to create reels. My marketing person is like, you have to create reels. You have to do content. You have to be out there. So while I have all this experience, I have all these resources, I have everything, but yet the younger generation is more comfortable with this. Am I comfortable with it? Heck no. But do I have confidence in myself enough to go figure it out? Yes. And that's what I'm doing. I'm putting myself out there. I have confidence in myself. I'll figure it out. But what the heck? What the hell? Sorry. What the heck is social media?
Yeah.
And reels? And how do you keep doing that?
And the thing is, right, that like these are all, they're probably new tools, new vehicles, new pathways to do what has probably been effective marketing and effective communication in the past. The old conference of, you know, thousands of people attending a convention type of thing is now sort of virtual in that virtual town hall.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll rejoin our conversation with Rajul Kadakia. Stay tuned. Every story told is a lesson learned, and every lesson learned is a story waiting to be told. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, this is Cal Penn. I'm an actor, author, former public servant, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hi, everyone. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's now rejoin our conversation with Rajul Kadakia.
I was thinking about sort of like bigger institutional things and structural things. And I was thinking about this from your experience. If you had to sort of prioritize, what kind of institutional structures or power levers are needed now to empower more women entrepreneurs and first-time female founders? What are some of those, you know, really critical institutional items that just need to be disrupted or changed?
I think from an institutional perspective, one of the biggest issues is funding. And that comes over and over, that comes up over and over again, is funding for founders, funding for diverse founders. But also on the angel side. So diverse founders, for example, they're having trouble becoming angel investors because of what accreditation means. Mm. And today accreditation means XYZ and not necessarily are diverse, you know, people accredited. And so all of a sudden that wealth gap is becoming larger and larger. So one of the most basic institutional changes that needs to happen is possibly redefining what accreditation means so that more people have access to funding.
Yeah.
That they can be funders and they can be investors. And on the flip side, there's a lot of red tape. So one of the things we're doing, there's a lot of money at the state level, county level, city level, and a lot of so not the traditional ones, not like Silicon Valley or New York or Austin, but there's like Middle America and there's Santa Fe and South Bend, Indiana. All of these cities and towns are trying to draw entrepreneurs. And one of the things that's happening is that they have so much money to disperse to founders in those areas, but there's just so much red tape. So one of the things we're doing with the Tech Girl Foundation is hopefully we can actually access those grants and we can hand them out to, you know, founders in need. So if there was a better way to get some of this early funding to them, you know, and one of the other things is, for example, they I don't know how familiar you are with early stage tech investing, but one of the things, the first rounds that they actually talk about is friends and family. Mm-hmm. Now, many of these diverse founders don't have credit cards to take money out on. They don't have the finances, and they also don't have friends and family of high net worth that they can just tap into and be like, oh, I have this idea. So how do you actually start getting some of that money to them? Because venture capital, even though the number is 2% for, you know, female founders, and it's even lower for Black and Brown founders, what's actually happening is that that curve is pushing so far out. And so people are, if you're going to venture funding, that means you already have revenue, you already have traction, you're already making north of $1 million run rate. So it's like, oh, by the time I get here, why do I need them? Right. But there's this huge gap right before venture funding where we really need to have more capital. And there's so many qualified founders. And this is exactly the space I play in. Now, it's a little bit more risky, obviously, but at the same time, the founders that I invest in are the ones who are coachable, the companies that I understand. So how do we actually connect angels with founders so that we can bridge this gap and the angels actually have that risk appetite? Because even if I have friends with money right now and I bring a founder to them, they don't understand this space. So how do you actually get someone, how do you connect those dots? I mean, we're working on it with Tech Girl, but this is one of the most institutional basic things with venture capital, which was, by the way, historically created because they wanted to take risks. They wanted to take tremendous risks. Now, all of a sudden, the chain, it's like LPs, blah, 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 whatever, and the whole risk curve has moved out. And so we have a huge gap for both men and women.
Yeah,
they have to get very creative in getting that funding.
Well, hopefully this kind of, you know, what you're talking about really is just making it an easier sandbox, you know, to sort of live in for women. And hopefully those kinds of institutional levers will get directed in a fast way and in an urgent way, just so all that money can flow a little bit better and create a lot more innovation. And I want to shift gears a little bit. You know, we were talking about this earlier, but you're a member and in the founder circle at Indiaspora. How has Indiaspora particularly played a role in accelerating the development of the capital and the ladders for advancement, you know, that we've talked about, especially for women? Is it solely the network? Is it the connecting the dots, if you will? What role has Indiaspora, you know, perhaps played in this for you?
So for me, it hasn't connected the dots necessarily for capital or, you know, helping with capital for my founders. But what it has helped me with is getting connected to other philanthropic organizations, getting, you know, connected to my South Asian heritage and culture and, you know, connecting all those bonds and creating greater impact. Like I always tell MR, like I'm talking to him, for example, and I'm like, you know, really want to bring in Diaspora to LA. I mean, of course, because I'm in LA, but I really want to bring it because, you know, there are a lot of Indian people. And all of a sudden, I feel like he's connected the dot, uniting us. He had a talk one time, which was really, it kind of resonated with me, which was Indian people don't organize in the same way that other people organize or other groups of people organize. And it was very interesting because as Indians or South Asians, we actually think of ourselves like, is that as South Asians, we just kind of stay out of trouble. We just were like, oh, just kind of, you know, do our own thing. And whatever is happening here, that's not happening to us. It doesn't affect us. And we don't organize and we don't unite and et cetera, et cetera. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, that actually opened my eyes. Yeah. I never thought about that. And I caught myself, again, staying authentic, being true to myself. And I caught myself. I'm like, I think I'm that way. I think I behave that way. So now all of a sudden I'm like, I want to embrace my culture. I want to stay connected with who I am. I want that for my kids. And I love this thread that he's kind of woven. And will that transcend or translate directly into the institutional side or helping me with capital for my female founders? Time will tell. But right now, you know, it's still, I love what he has built and what Indiaspora stands for, because it's really about giving back. And it's all of these Indian people giving back.
Well, so that, you know, that's a big point. You know, why is giving and philanthropy, and whether it's, you know, from the financial side or even the time and effort side, you mentioned trying to be able to develop and give back globally, right, to those women who are in emerging markets or emerging spaces. Why is that giving so central to your own mission?
So this is really interesting because my friends, I mentioned this earlier, they're like, well, why are you doing this? Why don't you just relax and go on a vacation? You know, what's going on? And I'm like, me personally, I've always had to have a purpose. I have to wake up with a purpose. So even if I've made it from a financial perspective, or I feel like, okay, I've done X, Y, Z, or I've made it as a parent, I need to keep waking up with a purpose. And so I was really doing a lot of soul searching. Giving back was always crucial to me. I always knew that. I've always paid it forward. That's something that's been innate to me as a person. Yeah. As a young, you know, even in my younger years, I've always volunteered. I volunteered for Pratham. I volunteered in government hospitals. Yeah. So that's been innate. But just kind of like now growing up, fast forwarding, I'm like, what do I want to do with my time left, right? What do I want to do with my time left on earth? And I'm like, okay, well, who can I help and how can I help them? So during COVID, this soul searching actually happened. And I'm like, how do I take what I've built? So this wasn't just like an overnight thing, like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm just going to wake up and this is what I'm going to do. But it was a lot of soul searching because I knew I wanted to give back. I knew I wanted to create a legacy for my children. I knew I wanted to create impact, but I could only do that in something I understood. Mm. And so the way this particular thing started was I started investing, and I invested in a company called Aquagenuity. And Aquagenuity was the first company that actually graduated from SoftBank's Emerge Fund. Mm. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is exciting. I love what they stand for. And so I started now saying, this is exactly what I want to do, is I want to bridge the gap, my country, India, and bridge it back to America from a founder perspective. And I did that anyways in my free time. So Tech Girl is pretty much a stepping stone in my own backyard to understand what I'm eventually going to offer female founders in emerging countries. And then just to kind of, you know, top that off, the startup world, the startup ecosystem in India, Pakistan, UAE, it's exploding. Yeah. So this is more selfish. I just want to be a part of those conversations. I want to know what's next. I love being on the pulse of micro trends and understanding what's going on and what those opportunities are. So it just all came together.
And it sounds like that feeds, you know, that energy probably is very nourishing to young founders and earlier people who are earlier in their career, entrepreneurs, whether they're women or men, but definitely in those emerging markets, it sounds like just sort of seeing and hearing that hopefully also lends itself to more giving and more contributions and more philanthropy as well. If you kind of reflect on your own journey so far, and we've talked about sort of like how this has been shaped with, you know, your identity and garnering trust and self-confidence, but both personally and professionally, and kind of now thinking about girls and women who are now entering that world of entrepreneurship, or the startup environment and ecosystem, or the tech space. What right now brings you optimism and hope and joy when you think about their future?
So what I mentioned earlier is one of the biggest things that brings me joy is that the conversations are changing. There's actually, even though we're getting rid of affirmative action or whatever happened with the Supreme Court right now, innately in organizations and corporations and the startup ecosystem, at venture funds, there's so many organizations now, people genuinely that feel that we need a diverse culture, that we need to embrace diversity, whether it's female founders or whether it's underrepresented founders. Diversity is actually creating freedom of thought. It's creating all of this, like it's the companies are embracing it, not just because they have to, is what I'm saying. I think it's a mindset shift. And what's happening with that, with the mindset shift, is that I think it's not forced, it's natural. People want to be around diverse people. They want to learn from their cultures. They want to learn. So one of the things I do is it's not just about men and women. I want to embrace diversity, whether it's from a cultural perspective, but also, you know, if they're older or younger. I'm learning from older people and I'm learning from younger people. To me, that's also diversity. You know, it's not just, okay, everyone like me, I need to kind of hang out with you and then we're all right. So it's creating so much more learning opportunities.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's changing in a very big way. And I feel like it's not linearly changing, it's exponentially changing.
Well, I hope that organic change, I know that organic change and all that is coming down the pipeline is certainly bright. And a lot of that brightness is certainly due to all of your effort. Rajul, thank you so much for this conversation. And I hope you'll come back and join us again in the future.
Thank you so much. Appreciate this opportunity.
Thanks so much, Rajul. And for more information, please go to techgirl.co and please also check out indiaspora.org. Again, thanks for listening, and please don't forget to review and rate and share and tell your friends about the show. Till next time, I'm Abhay Dandekar.